Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Joining us in Studio 3, as he does every Thursday, in plaid, I should say, is Boston Globe columnist Alex Beeman, as Marjorie and I do every Thursday morning. We do, every Thursday. We marvel at how fitting it is that his name is Alex Beam, because like Jim Beam, Marjorie said this morning, he is that straight out of the barrel way about him. Alex also has a new book. It's called American Crucifixion. Excuse me, let me finish, Alex, please. The Murder
of
Joseph.
That's not me giggling.
The Murder of Joseph Smith and the Fate of the Mormon Church. And by the way, he's doing a reading in Harvard Square on Tuesday night. Marjorie, at the end of this discussion, will tell you where and when it is. Hello, Alex.
Oh, Alex.
You guys are great.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad that you're here today, because I can't wait to talk to you about the ouster of Jill Abramson from the world's greatest newspaper,
I am going to be
the New York Times.
Such a catastrophic disappointment to you personally and to your gender. I don't know, because I just... I feel like everything I think about this is wrong, although partly what I quote-unquote think/know about it is probably correct, but nonetheless.
We should explain.
Story,
why don't you explain a little bit?
The reason I'm so interested in talking about this, she's only been there for 2 years. There was a story in Forbes magazine.
3 years.
Three years, excuse me. That she had, and Keller was there for 8 years, which is a long time. Anyway, that Jill Abramson was quote-unquote too bossy to run the New York Times, which was kind of an interesting accusation against a woman. And then also she had the temerity to contact an attorney to discuss the pay differential, which apparently was quite significant, between her and her predecessor, Bill Keller, and also between a previous managing editor at the New York Times, where she held the job with her. And you did notice that when they announced a new editor, it was not as if the praise was effusive for the departing Ms. Abramson. So she was like axed.
Yeah, I think what you got to do is you got to get alternative programming for the next 50. Because that dog is not going to hunt. That was like last night's dog.
Which dog?
Well, she's targeted because she's a woman. Oh. It's all about unequal pay. That thing won't last another 18 hours. I mean, although I think a much more interesting sort of concatenation of circumstances is looming into view. And I apologize to every woman I've ever known. Obviously, when a woman, I mean, really.
They're all listening.
It's a long list.
Do we have a sound of her voice?
We do. Let him finish the thought, okay, and then we'll play
her. Well, anyway, I mean, well, now that you've interrupted me, I really have no idea.
I'm sorry.
I have no idea what I'm going to say. No, but let me just finish. I mean,
go ahead.
It's bad to, you know, when a woman, quote unquote, you know, every word out of my mouth is the wrong word. But I mean, when a woman is managing assertively the way one should do, whether one is a man or a woman, mm-hmm. in, you know, these adjectives, it's like if Alan Dershowitz were here, you know, he'd say every Jew who's called bossy is a victim of anti-Semitism. I mean, oh, okay, maybe. I mean, okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, he always says
I'd say you're going to be a defendant in a lawsuit tomorrow.
Yeah, no,
but
I tell you, I shouldn't have even shown up.
Go ahead.
I mean, I'm sorry that she was called bossy or pushy or this. I mean, because obviously she has a very strong personality and is a hands-on, serious news editor. And yes, let's go to the clip of her voice. But I actually have a kind of more, I have a theory about what really is sort of happening here.
Well, was her stewardship,
that will eventually be proven correct.
Okay, was the stewardship was her stewardship of the New York Times good or not?
It was okay. I mean, in no way did she fail.
Let's hear.
Well, Alex, but I mean, if you read his Twitter account, Alex has been saying for months, this is a pushy woman. Let's face it. So,
bossy
pants,
whatever.
I believe he called her.
Here is a little sound, just to get you in the spirit of the moment, from the now former executive editor of the New York Times, Jill Abramson.
The Obama years are benchmark for a new level of secrecy and control. They have really, I think, put a chill on reporting about national security issues in Washington. My colleagues who are still there tell me that the atmosphere has never...
Obviously okay. pushy and bossy.
Okay.
You can tell right
God
there.
Almighty, okay. I can't take any more of that.
Okay, we have a theory.
What's that?
You want to hear my theory?
I think the theory had to do with her voice.
They didn't want to listen to her anymore? Is that what you're about to say?
I'm telling you, I think it was part of it.
Boy, we were having a decent show until you played that audio clip.
Yeah, it really does.
That was insane. That was like reading T.S. Eliot at 17 revolutions per minute or something.
Have you ever heard her before? That's how she talks.
Is that right?
Yes.
But why, Alex, I want to get back to your totally inappropriate comment. This in a New Yorker piece by Ken Auletta, who's not the chopped liver. Can
he's
we
always wrong, by the way. Well, he was wrong last night, too. But you go right ahead.
Okay. He goes on to say that her firing, several weeks before her firing, as Marjorie said, she discovered that her pay and her pension benefits as both executive editor and before that as managing editor were considerably below, as Marjorie said, Bill Keller. And because she essentially said, this has got to be fixed, it fed into the management narrative that she was pushy, which was the problem with her to that point. Why don't you accept that?
You know, he's just Ken Auletta. He's blogging last night. It's not a fact check, New York.
What did he say last night that was wrong?
That all went off. Well, because this whole that whole pay and pension thing, that's the dog that's not going to hunt. Next week, you'll be apologizing to me, okay? So just get
why
ready.
What do you know that causes you to say it's
not
going to hunt?
Well, actually, I know that, like, for instance, her pension was frozen in 2009. So was mine. I was shocked to learn that this was every employee.
New York Times owned the Boston Globe at that point.
New York Times owned the Boston Globe. So there's, you know, Bill Keller had many more years in on his pension. That's already come out. So there's a definitely disparity in pensions that kind of looks very shocking when Ken Auletta announces it at like 10:30 p.m. at night. But it's real. Well, the probable fact in there, the probable fact in there is that when she was a managing editor or deputy managing editor, it's highly probable that a man was paid more than she. That fact rings true.
That's
the other stuff is just BS. There's been tremendous. I at the New York Times, now I was slightly different. We were required to take like a 25% pay cut. They've also been pushing down management salaries as well. It may be a quote unquote fact that she earned less than Bill Keller, but that's going to be for exterior reasons. I think this is all about something radically different anyway.
What?
Ha! I'm glad you asked.
What?
Well, just before I walked in here, like about an hour and a half ago, BuzzFeed published the Arthur Sulzberger III report. And
on her?
No.
His statement?
It's this thing that's in the background. It came out like six months ago.
Oh, okay.
Sulzberger's kid, it didn't come out 6 months ago, but it took them. Sulzberger's kid was deputized to produce this thing, this big report about, is the Times doing well digitally? And the report is incredible. It's like hair on fire. The Times is not doing well digitally. We're getting killed across the board. This is a report written by the next publisher of the New York Times. The other guy is like my age. He's played out. He's
which other guy?
Arthur Sulzberger Jr.
All right. Okay.
It's his son. I mean, this is everything at the Times is in the context of family ownership and needing to make money to pay off the family.
So the rub on her was that she was doing horribly in the digital transition, and therefore she had to go.
I think it's much more complicated than that. Even I mean, okay. I think this place is. It's like Mount Etna. It's a little. I think there's three really interesting places in journalism. There's Bezos and Barron at the Washington Post. There's this lava flow that's just exposed as of last night at the New York Times. Utterly fascinating. And then to a lesser extent, you've got to ask, you know, where's John Henry in the Boston Globe and all this?
Yeah.
But here's the next publisher of the New York Times quoting, by the way, this woman from the Guardian. They clearly wanted to hire her, and so. They're talking about there's been something native advertising this, but it's much bigger than that.
Okay.
There's clearly some kind of digital versus print war, and I think when it all shakes down, you know, Abramson will be regarded as somebody who was intelligent, possibly overcautious, and this thing is really going to explode with this guy Mark Thompson, with the future publisher mm-hmm. Arthur Sulzberger. Maybe they will hire this woman from the Guardian. I don't know. I mean, it's stuff that we can't see. I think it's a very high-quality newspaper.
Well, let me just say one thing
okay,
here
yeah,
that
yeah,
I need
yeah.
to say, because I think it's really true. I don't know this Jill Abramson or not. I don't know how well she did at the Times, but I do know that it is much more difficult to run a major organization like that as a woman than it is as a man. It just is.
Well, why don't we
is.
Also say the thing that all three of us know to be true, and for some reason Alex is not saying.
What's
she apparently
that?
Told the young Sulzberger that under no circumstance could he ever bring Magic Johnson into the newsroom. Now, I think
okay.
it is totally...
I can't believe you're dragging down.
He could do anything else he wanted with Magic Johnson, but not bring him into into the newsroom. Let's segue into something that Marjorie broached with the governor. So why don't you take this, Marjorie?
Well, you talked about it. You're interested in this whole commencement roulette,
yes,
as we put it here at Boston Public Radio, where these commencement speakers get invited and then they get disinvited. Condoleezza Rice invited and disinvited to Rutgers University. The woman at Brandeis, that was not a commencement speaker. She was going to get an honorary degree.
I'm not sure it's how you pronounce it.
Abramson's getting a degree next week, right?
Is that really
on
true?
On Monday.
Where?
Somewhere in New England. I'm embarrassed.
I don't know that.
Possibly somewhere in Rhode Island.
And Christine Lagarde, who was disinvited from Smith College, she's head of the, what's the name
IMF,
of the world?
International Monetary Fund.
The best dressed woman in the world.
Yeah, she is wonderfully
she's
dressed.
Unbelievable. If Jill Abramson women. Dressed like that, she'd still have a job. Okay, believe me.
Yeah.
So what's your thesis on this? This is just a left-wing cabal kind of thing? Is that what it is?
What are we talking about?
But
the disinvited commencement speakers. I mean, not all of them, but most of them do have that in common.
Condoleezza Rice, by the way, was disinvited practically to Boston College a few years ago, but Boston College hung tough. She came and she gave a speech. It was a pretty good speech, actually.
I don't have a thesis.
Okay.
I mean, I don't have an easy. I mean, I just thought it's interesting to discuss because it's not, as you point out, it's not just left, it's the right. But it really plays into this thing about there's this kind of sort of almost juvenile. It just seems juvenile to sort of hate everybody because they're part of the bourgeoisie. I mean, that means the three of us will never be commencement speakers, apparently.
No, I know. I've
We're
never
part
been
of
invited.
The bourgeoisie.
I was a commencement
hated
speaker.
Bourgeoisie.
But that's
Have
okay,
you been invited
then.
To be commencement speaker, Alex?
Does high school count?
Yes,
really?
Absolutely. Which high school?
Roxbury Latin. I was a commencement
speaker. How great was that?
Roxbury Latin is
that's
one of the great schools in America
I'm
for
so
people
proud
that
of that.
Don't
it's
know.
It's my proudest moment.
That is great.
It's
How
my,
was it?
It's my proudest moment. I think I wanted to deliver a speech that couldn't be reproduced in the school newsletter afterwards, and I pretty much succeeded. Huge portions of it.
Would you swear?
No. But it was a really great honor, and it wasn't terribly uplifting, and I don't think I'll be invited back.
But give us a thrust of one or two things that were not printable, for lack of a better expression. What'd you say?
I made fun of their great. Oh God, I'm going to hell now.
They love this.
I made
I'm
fun
sure.
of their greatest graduate ever, not Christopher Lydon, unbelievably. But Jared Diamond, you know, Jared Diamond got the Pulitzer Prize for Guns, Germs, and Steel. And I reminded the audience, which they had apparently forgotten, that there was once an item. Apparently when Jared Diamond came to speak, all he talked about was himself and how he knew 55 different languages. So I said, I hope I don't get made fun of the way Jared Diamond got made fun of by the school newspaper.
They like that?
Because their headline was, Mr. Diamond, we are not worthy.
Wow, I'm
That's
impressed.
That's pretty good, actually.
That is, as I
oh,
said,
you're
one
sweet,
of the
you're
gems.
Sweet to
no,
be nice
I
about it.
I love Roxbury Latin. It's
I loved
great
it.
School.
I'll give you, I'm so naked. I'll tell you what, when I went to get a fantastic job like 30 years ago, my mom let me out of the car. I was about to go overseas to get a job to meet my wife. Big moment in my life. She let me out of the car, and I was like 30 years old, really intense. And the last thing she said to me was, don't forget to have fun. And I'm just so grateful to her for saying that. So that was my message. But it's not very uplifting. It's not as good as George Saunders'
George
message.
George Saunders was great.
That's who Marjorie mentioned
George Saunders
to
was great. And now he's
Patrick.
Got a book in the bestseller list all about it.
I know.
And if people haven't
that
read this wonderful
great,
book of
way.
Short stories, December, they are quite impressive.
No, he's amazing. And
amazing.
And DFW was amazing. I mean,
who's
I
DFW?
Feel like David Foster Wallace.
Oh, where did he speak?
Kenyon, hello.
Oh, okay.
Kenyon kind of trumps Roxbury Latin for greatest college in the world.
Are you a big fan of David Foster Wallace?
Oh, that's a trick question. We need 88 more hours.
Okay.
He's a great nonfiction writer. I just started his first collection of stories, which I'm reading for reasons I can't even tell you. They're kind of brilliant, but a little wild. I think Saunders is probably the better writer.
You do? Okay.
You know, Alex, one of the things we do to help promote your career, such as it is...
they're really in the toilet now.
Every week that you do have a new terrific book, but putting that aside for the moment, is we discuss your column of the day, which coincidentally is always happening on the day you're here. And yet again, you have talked about somebody no one has ever heard of this morning.
Yes, we have.
No,
we've heard of
very
him.
Few have heard. Now, who is John Mack is back, as you say. Who is Dr. Mack?
Or was.
Why should we care about Dr. And by the way, you've got to include how he died. because terrible. It reminds me of terrible. Another great death.
I was excoriated in the Globe for likening his death to that of Thomas Merton. Can you take the amazing?
Yes, I can. An electric fan went into the bathtub and killed him. And how old was Merton? Was he 50 or 51?
He was in Bangkok at a Buddhism conference.
He died.
Oh, wait a second. Before you go ahead, he was electrocuted.
I said this in print. I said two geniuses suffered the stupidest deaths in the world. And some
totally
woman,
stupid.
Yeah. I mean, the beautiful neo-Catholic thinker, Thomas Merton, dies when a fan comes into his bathtub. And Dr. John Mack, Harvard professor of psychiatry, Pulitzer Prize winner for a semi-questionable biography of T.E. Lawrence, champion of UFO abductees all over North America, unbelievably is in London in the prime of life, puts one foot over the curb, bang, he's a dead man because he looked left. And in London, the traffic comes from the right.
Now, by the way, you would pick Thomas Merton because you two are in a different world than I am. I would pick the finest death of that sort, and I may get his position wrong, is one of the major investors and leaders of the Segway. Do you remember how he died as a state, I believe in Great Britain. I'm not sure where it is. Do you remember what happened to him?
No, I'd love to hear
the
it.
The Segway is this thing invented by New Hampshire's own Dean Kamen. You remember. It's this thing where you look a little nerdy and you ride around.
Jim had one.
And they didn't have one. I've ridden on one. And I actually was in the movie America 10 Miles an Hour, about
they photographed Jim from the floor up
from behind.
That's totally true. So you have a picture of Jim's derriere.
But you don't want to be photographed from behind.
No, I don't know this guy's name. Do you know how he died?
No.
He was on a Segway riding around just recreationally on his estate, and he segwayed off a cliff. And that was the end of this particular. Yes, he did.
That's amazing. That's three fantastic deaths.
No, so why are you writing? Making jokes at your funeral. It's just terrible.
In any case, the reason you wrote about Dr. Mack.
I hope they make jokes at my funeral.
The reason you wrote about Dr. Mack was not because of not only because of how he died, but because of what he believed in, which was what? And quite controversial, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in Mack. I have a number of super dubious scoops to
Excuse
my credit.
Excuse me, his name was Jimmy Heselden. He drove his Segway off a cliff.
Thank you.
I just wanted to bring it up to speed. Thank you, colleagues. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I was bragging about my really questionable scoops. I mean, I had the... But Mack was this mesmerizingly brilliant and fascinating professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School who started taking... these crazy stories about, you know, people came to me while I was asleep. They put a probe in my rear end, and then they took me into the spaceship. He took all that stuff seriously. He went on Oprah. He had a best-selling book. I quote-unquote broke the story about this secret Harvard investigation into his activities, which was pretty interesting, although I must say I'm sort of two minds about it. But anyway, the Harvard Medical School convened a secret committee. They had hoped it was going to remain secret. However, Mack's lawyer was Eric McLeish,
I interviewed him last week.
Yeah, the great
about
litigator.
Bridgewater State Hospital. Eric McLeish, for those who don't recall, was the lawyer who helped break the story about abuse in the Catholic Church.
I mean, you know, he's an assertive guy, and so I mean that inquiry should never have been secret. It didn't remain secret. In any case, I always found Mack personally, I had never really met psychiatrists before. Now I know there's a lot of psychiatrists like him who are kind of truly spellbinding. But in any case, I just found his whole story kind of compelling. And the reason I did the column is that, you know, this lady, she's been on my screen for a while. She thinks she's going to do a big feature film about John Mack. She supposedly was talking to Robert Redford for 14 months.
Wow.
And he passed. I mean, they broke up, basically. It's clear the reason they broke up was that Redford's production house wasn't going to treat Mack with kid gloves. And
they're now talking to E.T. instead, but go ahead. Sorry.
You know, I have one question about Mack before we go. Jim and I have debated this many times, and maybe you have some new insights into the question. Why is it
when
the spaceships come and get people... They are always beamed up and probed.
Yeah, what is that about?
Have you thought about that?
That is all. Those are the two things that happen.
They're always beamed up.
Well, you're generally
and then probed.
You're probed first, generally, and then you're
no,
beamed
usually
up.
You're probed in the spaceship. He had it differently. Mack did. He had them probed first and then beamed up. But usually they're beamed up.
This
and
can
then
be your
probed.
45-second explainer because we forgot to come
yes,
up
I
with
know,
one today
to explain.
So how about that?
No, well,
Thank you.
You know what I love? I love people who go on the radio. That's a good question, Marjorie. Yeah.
I just maybe thought you had dwelled on that issue, as we have dwelled on it for many years, and we're suspicious.
Well, you would need a Harvard Medical School professor of psychiatry, I think, to give you the straight answer on that.
Have you ever done that column purely? Oh, it sounds like you did in the Thomas. We got to go, but on the Thomas Merton and the Dr. Mack thing, that did like Jimmy Heseldin in this whole series of.
Well, you know, those are called the Darwin Awards. Every year,
we've had those people on. Yeah.
They list like 12 ridiculous ways to die. No, yeah. I've never done a column about that. And I got really negative feedback for making fun of Merton.
Yeah.
But it's terrible.
It is terrible.
Well,
let's hope we don't have one of those kind of deaths.
When we go to London, let's be very careful.
Okay.
Alex, it's been a pleasure as always.
Thank you very much.
Where is he appearing, Marjorie?
Alex Beam is appearing at the Harvard Bookstore in Harvard Square on May 28th at 7 p.m.
May 20th,
when he's going to do a reading from his fantastic new book, American Crucifixion. At last, we can name one of the many books that Alex has written. The rest remains secret. Alas, Alex Beam is a columnist for the Boston Globe. And by the way, American Crucifixion is a great book about the murder of Joseph Smith and the Mormon Church. Up next, we talk to Teller of the Penn and Teller duo. He's in town for his adaptation. He's performing in this or directing in this and arranged it and all that on stage at the ART, A-R-T. That conversation next on WGBH.